Good evening, and welcome to the JMU Sports Blog Podcast. I'm Todd. I'm joined, as always, by my buddy Rob. What's up, Rob?
Hey, how's everyone doing?
Hopefully they're doing okay. We are suffering through this new app.
Technical difficulties.
Yes, fair warning. We may get cut off at any point tonight, but we'll see what happens. As always, we are brought to you by Pale Fire Brewing Company in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Pale Fire is doing some great things lately. Looks like they were the sort of the host site for the big event activities of the Harrisonburg chapter last weekend. And hopefully quite a few of you all got out there on that beautiful Saturday after the spring game, which is what we'll be talking about tonight. So we're excited. We're going to have Greg Medea from the Daily News Record on tonight to fill us in on what looked like a fantastic atmosphere down in the Berg this weekend. Huh, Rob?
Oh, yeah. It looked great.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, neither one of us were able to make it. But man, from all accounts, you know, talking to friends and reading Greg's coverage and just hearing about the tailgating and the great kind of stadium experience and some of the really exciting play. You know, definitely the quarterback controversy is heating up. And I'm sure plenty of fans think they have it figured out after watching 60 minutes of football, despite none of us having, you know, any insight into the practices, which is why I'm excited to hear Greg's take on it. I think, you know, I'm certainly, like you, very excited about Danucci, but, you know, it was one spring game.
That's right.
Let's not read too much into it.
Yeah, so. I'll be excited in whoever Houston chooses. I'm certainly excited about Houston's own excitement about the defensive line as well.
So yeah, me too.
We'll get
me
to that too. In a little bit. One other sports note that we will talk about tonight before we bring Greg on, we hope, is women's lacrosse. Again, number four in the nation in every poll this week. And they play at UVA in the makeup game from earlier in the season on Wednesday night. So they have three games left in the regular season. And I saw it's UVA on Wednesday. And then they have one this weekend. And then the following weekend, they play Towson, who is ranked eighth in all the polls. So that'll certainly be the deciding factor in the number.
Well, that's definitely going to be for number one seed in the tournament.
Sure.
I think that's been pretty obvious from day one. They won by, what, 11 goals yesterday?
Yeah. So
they won every CAA game by double digits?
Yeah, that's why I looked ahead to see when Towson was coming up, because I figured that'll be the one competitive matchup.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, they're neck and neck. Them and Towson are kind of 1-2 mm-hmm. in pretty much every statistical category, with the exception being giveaways and takeaways. And JMU does a really good job in both, and Towson not so much. Towson's a little looser with the ball, or they were, I think, last week was last
yeah.
time I checked, but they're a good team. That's going to be a real tough matchup and definitely get them prepared heading into the postseason.
And it's kind of cool. I mean, it's so hard. The thing I can't figure out with this team is, you know, I saw them early in the year against High Point, who's a pretty good team, and we watched some of those, like the North Carolina game and stuff, and it seemed like they were, you know, JMU was giving up goals. And lately mm-hmm. they've just been running over people in the CAA. And yeah. I don't know if their defense has improved significantly. I hope that's the case. Or if it really is just the level of competition. So who knows? It'll be fun to see with the two of these three games, definitely getting them back in tourney mode before the hopefully two tournaments come.
So, oh, yeah. Should be fun.
Yeah. So with that, we will move on to welcoming Greg. Talk to you guys on their side.
See you.
Rob, you there?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll just talk here for a second, see if Greg joins in the next 30 seconds and people can get some fun behind-the-scenes content here. There we are. Greg, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, welcome. So with that, we are excited tonight to welcome Greg Medea from the Daily News Record, who has been providing such just incredible coverage of the Dukes for the last few years. And he had the privilege, unlike Rob and I, of attending the spring game this weekend. I guess I don't know if it was a privilege or you were forced to for work, right? But welcome, Greg.
Good to be with you, Todd and Rob. It's good to hear from you guys again.
Yeah, we've been excited to have you back on, and we knew there wasn't anybody better to talk about spring football than you.
It's also nice to have another Met fan on tonight when they just went up 6-1 in the eighth. So.
And DeGrom's throwing well.
Oh,
DeGrom is throwing well.
DC sports fandom is a life of infinite sadness. Yes.
It's a story for another day. Let's talk some
yucks. Yeah. Robbie, go ahead.
Yeah. Just Greg, first and foremost, really just to echo what Todd said, really been enjoying your coverage since you came to Harrisonburg, but particularly this spring. You've been getting a lot of great content. The article that you most recently wrote about the QB battle, it seems like it's down to two. What was your impression? It seems like a lot of fans are really excited about DiNucci, but Johnson seemed to do pretty well for himself as well. What was your take on the game?
Yeah, as far as the spring game goes, I thought that in the actual spring game that DiNucci looked like he kind of fits what James Madison wants to do and what they've done since Mike Houston and Donnie Kirkpatrick, the coach and the coordinator, arrived before the 2016 season. You look at DiNucci's skill set, and I noticed it in some of the practices, and I wrote about this kind of ahead of the spring game, and as the spring was going along, is that DiNucci's skill set is very similar to Brian Shore's skill set. And I think if James Madison wants to keep the offense somewhat similar, wants to keep the offense at least within the same realm of what they did in the past two seasons, and then they found success with Brian Shore both running the football and passing it. He was great with the read option and throwing off of it, throwing on the run. I think DiNucci kind of can do some of the same things. I don't know if he has as strong of an arm as Brian Shore or if he can make the downfield throws like Shore did. And a lot of the time, Shore was helped out by a really talented wide receiving core.
Sure.
So I think that's kind of the one thing to watch with DiNucci, if he can be as effective off the run pass option and the play action and throwing the ball downfield when JMU needs to throw the ball downfield, which is what I think Johnson does really well. Is I think even though he may not be the most athletic, he may not be the greatest runner, I think he throws the ball downfield probably better than DiNucci does, and then that's been really since he arrived on campus, a couple of seasons ago. He came in with that 2016 recruiting class, and I think you look back at that Elon game where Brian Short was hurt and he had to start. He threw two long touchdown passes to Damo Taylor, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah,
I think that's one thing that Johnson does really well is throw the deep ball.
Yeah, I'd agree. Now, in terms of DiNucci's running, I wasn't there, I'm sorry, but is he the similar to, like, the Brian Shore just takes the pocket when he's down, he's just a north-south, gets some yards, or is he an elusive guy?
Yeah, I think it's a very similar running style. I do. I think, like Brian, they want to make the play in the passing game first, and that's kind of the interesting part of it. DiNucci's, he's not looking to run.
Okay.
But just like Brian, if it was a pass play, he's looking to pass the ball first. But if he has to, if the pocket breaks down, he has to move. I think that DiNucci can certainly do that, get outside the pocket and try to make a play down the field, or at least to a receiver coming back to the play before taking off and running. And what I think DiNucci does well is that he also, has that ability to get, pick up a first down with his legs if he has to. And I think that's very important, especially in college football, where it's all about, having a guy that can extend the play if the offensive line maybe isn't where a team needs it to be. And I don't know if that's the case with JMU. I think their offensive line is going to be very good. But I think it's kind of a luxury to have a guy that can scoot and make some plays with his feet.
It also seems like from the quotes you got from Houston, where he's really talking about this being a true competition and bringing out the best in people. Obviously, we can all point to the way that Shore reacted when they brought in the transfer from USC. Was it Connor Mitch? Can't even think his name.
Yeah, Connor.
And it seems like DiNucci coming to JMU and playing as a walk-on shows somebody who's really got that competitive fire. And then you had some great quotes from Johnson talking about how he really wants to focus on, his skills as a leader and taking over as leader of the team. So it seems like the guys are really buying into what Houston's selling, and that Houston is really, putting competition every spot on the field, particularly the most important one. Is that a correct read, or is that just kind of coach speak that we're hearing and maybe reading too much into?
I think that's a correct read, especially from the get-go of spring practice, where it was a four-man competition between DiNucci, Johnson, the Hunter Etheridge and the freshman Gage Maloney. I really do think they gave everybody a fair shot at least to start spring practice, and then it kind of got narrowed down, and you saw the reps be split differently between, of course, DiNucci and Johnson. And, and to be honest, I think this is much different than the Connor Mitch Brian Shore battle, because it wasn't really a battle.
Yeah.
With Mitch, he didn't arrive until, you know, midway through the summer. It's tough to learn an offense in a short period of time. Brian, at least, it had gotten that in the spring prior. So I think it was really Brian's job to lose going into that 2016 season. This, I think, is a head-on competition, DiNucci and Cole Johnson. And it's going to be whether or not I think the leadership aspect is a big part of it, because – one of those guys is going to have to emerge as the leader and, you know, be the guy that probably Houston and Kirkpatrick wants them to be with the team, where everybody looks and says, that's the quarterback. That's the guy who's going to lead the team. And I don't know who that is yet. I think with DiNucci, he at least has the experience of doing it and having to be that guy, having started games at Pittsburgh before walking on at JMU. With Johnson, he's seen it firsthand. He's seen how Brian was able to kind of cultivate and lead a team, you know, from the beginning of one season to a championship game, to winning a championship, to you know, carrying it into the next season in a 14-0 start in 2017. So I think both guys have to prove they can do it with this group. Now it'll be interesting to see how it kind of plays out, because I think this is one that'll go all the way into, you know, deep into training camp, if not that first week of the regular season.
Yeah, I'm excited as a fan. You know, sometimes QB battles can be a little bit scary as somebody who's like pretty vested emotionally in the team. But this is different, because it really does seem like they've got good options, and it's going to be one guy rising to the top. Through the Mickey Matthews years, he was a tremendous coach, but a lot of his QB battles, I always thought as a fan, were really more about him being indecisive, and it was just kind of not being able to make a decision. I've got a lot of confidence in Houston, and from what I've read, like from the articles that you have and other interviews that I've heard from both these guys, it just seems like somebody's really going to step up, and it's going to be a good situation for the program.
No doubt. I think, and that's the thing with Houston, he hasn't shown you really in any situation that he's not afraid to make a decision. I think he's been very clear on his stance with certain things, especially with guys in playing time. Every job has to be won. You've seen FBS transfers come in. Some guys find their way on the field. Other guys, you know, like Connor Mitch, you know, couldn't get on the field because they weren't guaranteed anything. You know, everything is a competition with Houston, and I think that's very important, and that's how you gain a lot of respect from players, I think.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's enough quarterback sissy talk here. I want to talk about the group that Coach Houston seemed the most fired up about. What did you see from the D-line this week? Houston seems certainly pretty enthusiastic about what he's seeing along the defensive front.
It's interesting. I think with that group, because of the influx of transfers, you know, and I'm not just talking the recent transfers.
Right.
You can look at guys that have come since Houston.
Yeah, Carter's
and taken over. Yeah, right. You get Darius Carter, Rondell Carter. And then, you know, now you look at the guys like Paris Black and Matt Terrell. I think that group is loaded. And then remember Darius Carter, he was one of a bunch that didn't practice at all this spring. And that was a kind of a different storyline, is that JMU was trying to make sure its guys were good to go, you know, come summer. But Darius Carter, former Virginia player, you guys have seen what he's done over the past couple of seasons, 10.5 sacks in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Rondell Carter, I think. And this was the guy that I think probably had the best spring of any player on the roster.
Oh, wow.
He's a guy that Houston is totally fired up about. And Rondell, he said it to me, he wants to be a guy to lead the defense. He wants to be a guy that takes control. If you look at what they lost, they lost a ton of leadership on defense, between Raven Green, Jordan Brown, Andrew Rankra,
Herford.
Hawkins, Herford too.
Yeah.
So I think they need a guy, and with the way Rondell Carter practiced, the way he's vocal with his teammates at times, I think he's a guy that can do it. He's added weight. He prefers to play defensive end, but as you guys know and saw this past season, he'll play inside if he has to and really try to be a factor in pass rushing situations at the defensive tackle spot. So maybe they can get you know, a guy like John Dacca on the field.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
This fall, rather. Dacca is a guy who's developed. They've done a good job of developing players there. You'll get Mike Green on the inside, possibly. Adib, he's an option there. Yeah. They have some different ways they can align that defensive front, because with Carter and Paris Black, both guys are versatile. They can play inside or outside. So depending on what look Jamie wants to give its opponents, I think they have a little bit of a luxury there in how they can configure it.
That's great to hear. That was kind of a fun group for us to watch this week, because, like you said, other than Darius Carter, that was a group that was fairly healthy in the spring.
Right.
Least seemed to have a lot of the guys out there that are going to be out there in the fall. There were a lot of units on offense. I mean, I think about the receiver spot where, you know, we know a couple of the guys at the top, but we're really not sure what's going on there. They didn't have anybody. I mean, it was Percy. I think they only had two running backs available at the end of the camp there, right?
Yeah, the offense,
it's a patchwork group.
The quarterback, you kind of feel bad for the quarterbacks, because they're out there trying to win a job, and they really got none of their weapons to use.
Right.
You know, you look at the backfield, and Percy had a good spring, but he was taking every snap, along with, you know, former walk-on Eric Curlew, who made the team last year as a kid who had to try out, as an on-campus tryout.
All right.
The team. So those were the two running backs. At receiver, it was a bunch of, you know, freshman, sophomore, redshirt freshman types, because Stapleton, you know, he sat out most of the spring. He practiced a little bit. Same thing with David Eldridge. Clayton Cheatham had practiced for the most part until, I think, the last 2 days. He missed, you know, the Thursday before and the spring game. Mm-hmm. You know, Houston expects to have all those guys who missed the spring back as soon as, you know, kind of the summer begins and they start working toward getting ready and gearing up for training camp. So I think, you know, with the offense, it was just tough, because they really didn't know, you know, what they totally had at the skills position. So it was really kind of a development camp for some of the guys that were seen in the game on Saturday. Jake Brown, Kendall Dean, Josh Sims, Jameer Hudson at receiver. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you look at running back, and I mentioned Percy, Jay Obisay, and Curlew. And then the one group that was pretty steady throughout for the offense was the offensive line. I think they have some options, and they can kind of figure out where to go from here.
Yeah, they seem to move guys around a lot during this game even.
That was on purpose. I know Mike Houston, he had told me earlier during the training camp that they were going to just try some guys at different positions. They're trying to find the best five. I think they know some of them. I'd be surprised if Mac Patrick isn't the center. He's been the center for the, you know, the past year, and right. You know, even at times the year before when Kyle Rigney got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Fornato's going to play right tackle, and I think Jackson's going to play left tackle. The guard spots, Zaire is probably locked into one of them, and I think Jake Glavin had a good camp. But it's going to be interesting when Jaron Butler gets back from injury and Tyree Chavis gets 100%. He practiced a little bit, Chavis, during the spring, but, you know, sat out the spring game because, you know, he's fresh off an injury too.
That's great to hear. One last go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, just need depth at offensive line. I mean, the last couple of years have showed us, like, they've had other guys who really need to step up and replace people. Hopefully we won't have that next year, but you never know. If you have six or seven guys all challenging, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, you need as many bodies as you can. It kind of the same thing goes for running back.
Yeah.
You
know, you look at the amount of guys out this spring, and then you think about, you know, how many different guys carried the ball for them last year and a year before. You know, you need multiple bodies at certain positions. Linebacker's another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Dimitri Holloway. We
That's what I was going to ask you. So he's one of three guys I wanted to ask you about.
All right, go ahead. Who were all the guys you wanted to ask?
Yeah, well, the last guy on offense, before we get back to Holloway, because he's the guy I'm most excited to hear about. But where does Nick Carlton stand?
Yeah, Nick Carlton's still coming back from the injury. He didn't practice. I think they're looking at Clayton Cheatham to be the starter at tight end. Mm-hmm. And then I think Carlton fits in. What I think is interesting is if they can't find somebody to play that inside receiver spot, I think it's certainly possible that they line up Carlton on the inside at receiver at times if he gets back to 100% health or close to it by the start of the season, because he's a guy that can absolutely catch the ball. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
He struggled at times with blocking, but You know, if they can't find an inside receiver, I think he's a guy that can run down the field, make a play up the seam, and give JMU a pretty quality weapon there, former high school receiver. I think he's certainly somebody that could do that, and he'll definitely play tight end. You know, JMU likes to use more than one tight end. So you'll see plenty of Nick Carlton, I think, come fall.
That's exciting because, I mean, we saw a little bit of flash at East Carolina last year from him, for sure, in that getting down the field role. So that's exciting. Yeah, on the defensive side, though, not to cut you off there, but on the defensive side, how was Holloway?
Holloway was good when he was healthy this spring. And you know, he's coming off a pretty major injury that kept him out for, you know, everything but the opener last year. He practiced a lot. Some of the practices he was limited in, and that was on purpose, by design. What they're trying to do is develop kind of a relationship there at the two linebacker spots between Holloway and Landon Word. They need guys to be comfortable in the middle of that defense, making all the calls, making all the checks. Because it's not a senior group that knows exactly what to do at every level. So I think some of the importance is on the linebackers this year to understand that, especially since Holloway has played a very significant role in the past, and that you know, is probably going to be a significant contributor for the next two seasons. I think those two guys will be fine. Holloway looked good when he was practicing. So I don't think they have anything to worry about at linebacker as long as Word and Holloway stay healthy. Even there's a couple of guys behind them, but I think if those two stay healthy, they'll be fine.
That's exciting. And then the third guy on the third unit on the special teams is, have we seen any sightings from Tyler Gray this spring?
Yeah, that battle's still going on. It is an ongoing competition between Gray and Ethan Ratke. At kicker, and I think both of them could end up, you know, getting the play. It could be one on, you know, field goals, point after attempts, and then the other on kickoffs. Houston has even said, when I asked him about it, he basically said, you know, it'd be good not to have to put all the pressure on one leg. If they can break it up and they have guys there that can do it and that are capable of it, then you're basically, you know, making sure your field goal kicker's feeling good every time he goes out there, doesn't have to worry about kicking the ball off. So I think it's pretty strong to say, obviously, I think both guys want to be the field goal kicker, Ratke and Gray. But whoever doesn't win that job, I don't think they're going to be totally out of work.
Okay, that's good to hear. Yeah, well, and I mean, we all know that Harry could do it anyways if they need him to. So.
Harry's had a good spring. They're working on some different things with him. He's practiced a lot with kind of the straight-on traditional punt. Is just, you know, making sure he can get that down. He's got the rugby style kick down, can do it left, can do it right. Everybody knows it. Everybody's seen it. He can fake it. He can fake the punt. So I think he's fine as far as it goes. I know he's kind of becoming kind of a cult figure. Is that fair?
Yes.
With the
definitely.
Fan base, but I think he'll be fine.
Okay. We've already talked about some of the transfers that are on campus already. Do you expect Houston to bring in anybody else? I mean, after all these other spring games going on around the country, there's people who are going to be making decisions and leaving. Has he indicated that he's looking to add any more players?
I do think there will be a transfer or two within the next, you know, before the summer ends, before people, you know, start showing up for camp. I think it'll be at a position in need. I think there are certain spots you could look at for sure. I think probably receiver is one of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe safety.
Yep.
But there's also a possibility that he slides one of those corners over to safety, one of those older corners over safety that are already on the roster. And then you guys know they haven't practiced at all this spring besides Jimmy Moreland.
Right. Rashad hasn't. Yeah.
Rashad Robinson and Charles Tutter all working back from injury.
Okay.
It's possible those two spots. I think, you know, if I'm just thinking out loud here, maybe I said receiver already. I thought initially maybe the offensive line would be an area just because they don't have any seniors and maybe, you know, a grad transfer could help out with some experience, but I don't think they need that. I think the offensive line is fine depth wise. Maybe running back. If they want to try to balance the classes, because they've got three upperclassmen and just, you know,
younger guy. Yeah.
Because they didn't sign anybody. If you remember, they didn't sign anybody.
Okay.
Recruiting class at running back. So There's just a couple of different options. I haven't, you know, been told anything or anything that I can share with you guys that way. But that's a couple of options I'm thinking out loud about.
Yeah, that's what we were. I think we would have thought receiver, safety, maybe linebacker depth. I hadn't thought about the running back angle, but that's true with the classes.
Yeah,
if they get a younger guy that, who can stay a couple years, that might help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what about the new staff? I mean, what's just the general mood around the team and the staff? You know, they've got two or three new coaches in this year.
Right.
And certainly, like you said, I mean, a lot of the big names of these last two runs are gone. Rashad and Jimmy will be back there on the corners, but you know, a lot of the big names have kind of moved on. So, you know, what is the general vibe around this team? I mean, last year felt like a real continued growth of the 2016 team.
Right.
You know, just kind of carrying over, keeping the machine running. Does this feel different than that?
Yeah, there's a little bit different of a vibe just because, well, first of all, they're coming off a championship game loss. So
mm-hmm.
I think there's some of that, I don't want to call it misery, but there's some motivation there because of it, I would say. I think also with the new staff, and Bob Trott had mentioned to me, Bob Trott, the defensive coordinator, he had mentioned to me that it's been a little bit of a slower install this spring. It was a slower install for the defense, and that's not only because there's a bunch of new players around. It's also because they have a new corners coach and they have a new linebackers coach. And
right,
you can only go as fast as the coaches can teach it. They have they're good coaches, but you know, they haven't been teaching this system too much. And that's Carrico Wright, the corners coach who came from Clemson, or who came from Murray State via Clemson, played at Clemson.
Okay.
And then, of course, Warren Bielan, who came from Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Was at Wake Forest previously as well. On the offensive side, I think Donnie Kirkpatrick and Steve Shankweiler, you know, get along really, really well. You can tell there's a good relationship there between the two of them. Really, I don't think anything too drastically will change on offense. You may see some different things scheme-wise they do up front, but nothing that will probably pop out to the average, you know, the average fan just watching the game and following the ball. So I think, you know, you look at the new additions to the staff, and I think it's pretty smooth. And I guess on the other side of it is there's the Fontel Mines, the receivers coach, kind of was bumped up to recruiting coordinator. With Tripp Weaver's departure, he's still coaching receivers, but he also has the recruiting coordinator tag as well.
Gotcha.
So that's something to watch this summer as offers and start flying out and people start looking for scholarship acceptances and commitments.
Yeah, we saw Coach Mines all over Twitter this weekend because it looked like they had a bunch of recruits on campus this weekend as well.
Yeah, junior day is the past 2 weekends. So
yeah.
They've had a lot of prospects on campus.
Well, it was a beautiful day for people to get a look at JMU.
Yeah.
And what do you think about the fans? That's, as long as Rob and I have been paying attention, I don't think we can recall more excitement around a spring game than this one.
Yeah, there were a good number of people there.
Yeah.
There really were. And I think, you know, I think the fan base is excited to see how they bounce back from losing to North Dakota State.
Yeah. That's so exciting. Yeah. Rob, you got anything else?
No, just once again, really appreciate it, Greg. I've been enjoying your coverage and love having you on the podcast. So thanks again for being our guest.
All right, guys. Hey, appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you very much. You guys can find Greg on Twitter and Facebook and, of course, in the Daily News Record. So we'll tweet you some links when we put out the show notes. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Once again, thanks to Greg Medea for taking the time with us tonight. We really enjoyed talking with him. It's the second time we've had him on here. Rob, he's just the best guest in terms of knowledge of the program, right?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's like encyclopedic. And good enthusiasm, just good guy. I really enjoyed that. Of course, I jinxed he and I bring up the Mets thing. They proceeded to blow the lead in our conversation. So I learned my lesson. That's a little bit of karma for me.
You guys were all joking, and I got off the phone, and then I didn't even know what was going on. And I thought, I guess I'll just enjoy this. Yeah.
Yeah. He texted me, and I was like, oh, bad news, bad news.
Well, once again, thanks to Greg, and thanks to Palefire, as always. Go by the tap house there in Harrisonburg. Mention the JMU Sports Blog podcast. You'll get a free pint glass. always thanks to them. Looking forward to getting down there sooner or later. Rob, any last words tonight? We're not going to do an OT tonight, everyone. We were excited to have Greg on. It's about all we can stomach this week with our new recording. We'll see if we can figure this out a little better for next week.
Hopefully it comes across for the listeners a little smoother than it was for us. That's right. This was a good learning experience. No, just let's keep it short and sweet. Really, once again, thanks to Greg. Really enjoyed it. It was great to talk football. Hope everybody had a terrific time at the spring game, and we'll be back next week with something different.
Go Dukes!
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.